You are listening to BensTorah.com.
No Tachra this morning. Megillah says, Kra Lai Moed. But it's not that it's a Moed in a happy sense, because if you look at the two next words, it's Kra Lai Moed's call for an appointed time, Lishbor Bachurai, to destroy my children. What is it that Hashem said that we should be set at a appointed time? Rashi explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged that the night of Tisha B'Av, the night of destruction, should also be the night that the Meraglim returned. And that's the night that is designated for Bechiya L'Doros. That's the Moed. It's a Moed of destruction. But interestingly enough, if you look just three or four psukim earlier, in the also the first parak of Eicha, the word moed is used in a happy way. There it's talking about moed as a time that Klai Yisrael will come, enjoy, except the fact that it's mibli boi moed, without those who are coming for a moed. The same contrast of the word moed, of being an appointed time for destruction as well as an appointed time to celebrate, that contrast appears also in Perek Beis of Eicha. Vayachmos kegan sukkos shiches moado, he destroyed his appointed place. Shikach Hashem b'tzion moed v'shabbos, he made all the yomim tovim, el Shabbos, he made them just disappear, dissipate. Zanach Hashem Mizbecho, he denigrated his Mizbeach, Nier Mikdasho, he accursed his Mikdash, he gave it over to the enemies. Kol Nasu B'Veis Hashem, our enemies called out in Beis Hashem, Kiyom Moed, like a celebration, except it wasn't our celebration. Okay, so there are different aspects of Moed. There's a Moed that's happy, there's a Moed that's designated for destruction. Rav Avram Shor in Halakach V'Libav quotes the Sfas Emes and points out on the pasuk in Tehillim, Vatashkema B'Dmeos Shlish, if everybody could please turn off your cell phones. In the same way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows Klai Yisrael to experience him, to encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and make Aliyah L'Regel, says the Sfas Emes, we have the same opportunity to encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu by being Mis'abel on Churban Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Moed means. The Moed means that the same way that on every Moed we're Roeh Pnei HaShechina, we have that opportunity to be Roeh Pnei HaShechina through the other kind of Moed, through its inverse model of the Moed, through the Avelos. That's our goal for this morning. That yes, it's a moed. A moed carries with it Re'iyas Panim, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself allows himself to be seen. Yireh Yira'eh. And through crying for being Mis'abel on the Beis HaMikdash, that will provide us the opportunity to experience that same Re'iyas Panim, that when we had the Beis HaMikdash, was only experienced through joy, now we could experience it through our closest to Hashem that we're able to express through our Avelos. We read Eicha on Tisha B'Av. Eicha is like any other Megillah on any of the other Yom Tovim. On Esther, on Purim we read Esther, on Rus, on Shavuos we read Rus. And there's a relationship between each of the Yom Tovim and the Megillah that we lane. But there's a little bit of a difference between Eicha as a Megillah of the Yom Tif, of the Moed, on one hand, and the four other Megillahs on the other Yom Tovim on the other hand. It's not just that there's a common theme of Eicha and Tisha B'Av, as opposed to all the other Yom Tovim where that is the case, where Soloveitchik writes that in order to do certain things in Yiddishkeit that you theoretically shouldn't be allowed to do, you need a matir. You need a matir. You need a matir from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. You need a matir from the Nevi'im. What right does a Jew have to say why? What right does a Jew have to say how? What right does a Jew have to say eich? What right does a Jew have to say eich? And the answer is only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed us to say it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us permission to say it through the mouth of Yirmiyah HaNavi. And therefore we read the Sefer Eicha not because it's a Megillah like any other Yom Tif, but we read Eicha because Eicha is that which is matir for us to say the kinos and to ask the questions of why and of how and how could it be and why should it be. For that reason, we're able to read Eicha at night. After all, the halacha is that ksuvim are not allowed to be read at night, Medina. Some are makpin not even to say Tehillim at night. Because Esther is a different reason for, based on a pasuk, based on two pasukim. But with this, we can understand why Eicha is indeed, yes, permitted, because it's not read as a regular sefer of Nevi'im, but it's read to be matiras, to do the avodah sayom of saying kinos. We open up the first kina with kina number 6, Shavas. Shavas just means everything came to a standstill. There was absolute cessation. There was silence, shock, disbelief at the Churban. People were dumbstruck. They never imagined. When the Nevi'im would prophesy, there's going to be destruction, they ridiculed the Nevi'im. They threw them into jail. Part of the reason for Chil Shabbos, part of the reason for Chobot HaBeis HaMikdash is Chil Shabbos. The Pesukim and Yirmiyah say explicitly, V'haya, says Yirmiyah HaNavi, Yimshamoa Tishmon Eilai, if you listen to me, not to carry, Be'ir HaZos, not to carry on Shabbos, B'Yom HaShabbos, U'Lekadosh is Yom HaShabbos, and not to do Malacha, then I assure you, you know who's going to come into this city? Then you know who will come into the city if you keep Shabbos, Melachim, Visarim, and people sitting on Kisei David HaMelech. Ish Yehudi, Yoshua, Yerushalayim, that's going to be the inhabitants of this city, La'olam. However, in Perakir Yud Zayin, Pasuch of Zayin, Vim lo sishmu elai, L'kadesh Yom HaShabbos. But if you don't keep Shabbos, and you carry on Shabbos, you know what's going to come into Yerushalayim? V'hitzati esh b'she'areha. There'll come fire into your gates. V'achlar menos Yerushalayim, and it'll devour all the castles of Yerushalayim. We're in Shabbos Kafutes, en hadleka mitzuya el b'makam she'eshchil Shabbos. Fires come because of Chil Shabbos. And it quotes this pasuk in Yirmiyah. Amar Abaye, l'charva Yerushalayim el b'shvil she'eshchil l'bayis ha'Shabbos. But my friends, I look around and I see, and what does that have to do with us? Baruch Hashem, we all keep Shabbos. But does it hurt you when you see Chil Shabbos? The Chofetz Chaim once traveled into Russia, and he once saw Chil Shabbos. Came back to his Beit Medrash, he saw somebody be Michal Shabbos. And he, I don't know if it was the Beis Medrash of that shtetl where he visited when he came back to Rabin. And he cried and cried and cried, how could it be that a Jew would be Mechal Shabbos? The following Shabbos, apparently, he witnessed another Jew be Mechal Shabbos. And he dashed again in the Beis Medrash, how could it be that a Jew is Mechal Shabbos? And he cried. And he added on that second Shabbos, that last Shabbos when I cried, it hurt me more. Because I became desensitized. Rav Elie Lapian, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he wasn't able to spit. He couldn't spit because the land had so much kedush, he couldn't bear to spit something in his mouth, some phlegm. He couldn't spit because the Kedusha Sa'aretz. Until little by little, he realized that, you know, he felt that sensitivity a little bit less. We have a Zoom. Today it's a Thursday morning. I would venture to guess that the majorities of Jews in our generation who go to Shabbos davening. It's on Zoom. Rachmana litzlan. Does it hurt us? Do we care? And if you think even that's distant, even that's far away, it's not in my town, it's not in my shtetl, it's maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 miles away. I'll tell you a story that's closer. A story that happened this week that's very close to you and to me. I had a meeting of another rabbanim, local rabbanim. I don't know when this story took place, but it's one of the rabbanim who you probably know his name. You might have met him. He was a Masada Kedushin for somebody from a neighborhood not far from here, where you know people from that neighborhood. Masada Kedushin for a yeshiva boy, a graduate of a yeshiva. And he had the Chasan Tish, 25 friends there, all grew up in, went to yeshivas. And apparently the person who was supposed to be the Eksuva was late, didn't show up, so the Masada Kedushin asked the Chasan quietly, so who do you want to pick for your Kedushin, just as long as, said the Eksuva, just as long as he's, completely Shomer Shabbos. He doesn't have to be the Tzadik Yisod Olam, but at least Shomer Shabbos. And this boy went to yeshiva with all of his friends, went to yeshiva, looked around at the Chasan Tish, all of his friends who know how to read and who know how to write their name in Hebrew. And he looked around, and I'm telling you the story from the mouth of the Masada Kedushin who told it to me this week. The boy could not point to a friend of his with 25 boys who all went to yeshiva, who fully kept Shabbos, who didn't go on Instagram, who wasn't checking WhatsApp statuses on Shabbos. This isn't the Reformed Temple in Melville, Long Island. This isn't Kansas. This is a few miles from where we're sitting this morning. If I could draw your eyes to the letter Pei in this coming Kina, in the English version that I have on page 152. Palgei Suf, the splitting of the sea, Zachra, we remembered, Ka'aru Yisodeha, as they destroy the foundations of Yerushalayim. That contrast, we remember on the one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was able to split the sea for us as we had Yetzias Mitzrayim. And now the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and we point out last night, that contrast, the same day, today, Thursday is the same day, Wednesday night is the same night as the Seder night. The contrast between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Churban, and that Palgei Suf, which on one hand all means the splitting of the sea, but we know where the word Palgei is used in the Echa, not to celebrate the splitting of the sea, but Palgei Mayim Teirad Einai, the streams of water that flow down from my eyes. I'll shever basami on the destruction of Klal Yisrael. And that same word palgei, that on one hand means the splitting of the sea, on the other hand means the streams of water streaming down our face, could also be a hint to why we're sitting here on the floor. That same word palgei mayim, that an echa is used to say, the cries for the destruction of my people. Well, in Tehillim Perek Kuf Yutes, those same two words say maybe why. Palgei mayim yardu einai. Alo shamru sarasecha. Because we didn't listen to your mitzvahs. Please continue to the third pei on page 154, the second line, if you have my version. Patsu chazire yar. Haye chasideha. The pigs, patsu, they jeered, they sneered at us. Where are her chasidim? Where are all the tzaddikim in Klal Yisrael? Where are your righteous? Who are those chazirim? I'll tell you about a chazir. I'll tell you about such a pig who spoke 2 days ago. Today is July 27th. It was in the news on July 25th. If you recall, on July 24th, there was some chayalim in Shechem, and a car pulled up near where they were stationed and started shooting from M16s. And what happened? Well, if somebody shoots an M16 at you, what are you supposed to do? Stand up straight so you could be a convenient target? Drop your weapons so you don't, God forbid, get accused of anything? You shoot back and you neutralize the terrorists. The next day, it was in the news, July 25th, 2 days ago, the Palestinian Authority expected outrage at Tuesday on the elimination of three terrorists during the operation in the Shechem Nablus area. Nabil Abu Rudaina, spokesman for the Palestinian Authority chairman Mahmoud Abbas, called the incident the murder of three young men, a war crime. The incident occurred when a vehicle containing three armed terrorists arrived at Hashomronim Air neighborhood in Shechem and opened fire towards RDF soldiers. The soldiers opened fire and neutralized the terrorists. They also located and confiscated three M16s, a pistol, cartridges, and additional military equipment. Those pigs are telling us, Aye Chasida, where's your righteousness for returning fire when they're shot at with M16s? Those are the Chazirim of today. And so we begin Shavas, thinking of the destruction, but also thinking of the destruction in our own communities, that perhaps we have to be mechazik our own Shemir Shabbos, not just our diktuk and halacha, but what our Shabbos table should look at with a simcha, not looking to get out of shul as quickly as we can, not looking to finish the meal to get into bed as quickly as we can, because if that's what your Shabbos looks like, then what do you expect your grandchildren's Shabbos to want to be? Shavas Urim Imeni. The next kina, Kina Zion, uses a literary technique called foiling. Foil is to highlight a point, you contrast it. What we were and where we are. In the same way, a young woman whose husband storms out of the house and out of the marriage, and she pathetically cries at the door, tries to grab onto him as he's walking out. Don't you remember how much you loved me? Don't you remember when you proposed to me? Don't you remember all the gifts you brought me when we got engaged, as you kissed me in the yichud room? Don't you remember our honeymoon when we went on vacation? Don't you remember? How could you do this? Don't you remember? And that's what we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Echa atzta ba'apecha. How could you be so in such a rush in your anger, la'abed, to destroy those who are faithful to you? V'lo zacharta, don't you remember? Don't you remember Brisbane HaBisarim? Next paragraph. Echa ga'arta b'garasech. How is it that you're screaming, that you're roaring to send us into galus? Don't you remember? Midbar, don't you remember when we went after you in the Midbar? Hey, how is it that you intended, you planned to destroy us? You don't remember the Sanhedrin, all the gatherings that we did in your honor. The pathetic cries when it's too late. 11 Echas. With two letters for each, which are the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis. And you know what this keen is all about? It's about 11 questions with no answers, no attempts for an answer. On the Gimel, in the second paragraph, Eichel ga'arta b'garasecha, how is it that you roared against us, liglos, to send into galus, biyad, in the hands of whom? Geyim. Those arrogant ones. And who are you sending in the hands of those arrogant ones? Gulecha, the people who you previously redeemed. We've seen these words before. We've seen these words in the context of a geula. But what happened the last time we saw the word geyim as yashir? As yashir Moshev ne'esas, ashir azos, ashav, emro, ne'ma, ashir la'ashem ki? Ga'o ga'a. What does Onkelos translate? Ka'oga'a. You are miskaya al geva sanaya. The people who are arrogant, you were arrogant above them. They were arrogant and you put them in their place. Last time we saw this use of the geyim, it was Hashem being miskaya against our enemies. And here he's using the geyim, those arrogant ones, to destroy whom? Ge'ulecha, the people who you once pulled into Ge'ula. Lezacharta, you didn't remember. That's the bitterness of Galus. The bitterness of Galus is that it's not like it has to be this way. It's not like it always was this way. But how come it is this way now? That's the question that we've been asking for the past 1,953 years. Kina Zion. Echa atzta be'apecha. Continue with Kina Tess. Kina Tess also has a paragraph for each of the letters of the Aleph Beis, 22 paragraphs. Also, like the previous and the coming Kinos written by Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, after having asked all the questions and not even attempting to answer, finally, we do ask another Eicha here, but we offer some kind of rationalization. We try to make sense out of the madness and we do what we're supposed to do. Person sees Tsaras coming. The proper Jewish attitude is Yefashpish B'masav. Not to blame yourself and say I'm terrible, but to say maybe Hashem's sending me the Tsaras not just because of the stars and destiny, but because of my Maisim. And therefore, we have here references in each paragraph, the fourth line of every single of the 22 paragraphs, quote psukim from the Tochacha, first from the Brachos, that Hashem promised, if you'll do my mitzvahs, mechukosai teilechu, and of the next paragraph, nasati gishmechem biitam, I'll give you rain in the proper time. Next paragraph, look at the bolden words, v'yisilachem daish es batzir. Next paragraph, look at the bolder words, Nasati Shalom Ba'aretz. All the brachos that come if we keep HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvos. And then in the middle of this kina, we switch to talk about all that happens because of the second half of that sugya in Bechukosayim Lo Sishmu, in Bechukosayim Tim Asu. I'm just reading the bolded lines, which is the fourth line of each of these paragraphs. If you don't follow the mitzvos, then I'm going to have to send all kinds of other punishments. Instead of the wonderful brachos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu offers us, each paragraph begins with, look at the first one, starts with the letter Aleph and Tav. The next paragraph is the second letter. Beis, Bila, and the second to last letter, Shoftai. It's written in an Atbash format to show that everything's backwards. Instead of what we should have had, of having all the brachos, of following B'chukosai Teilechu, instead we're struck with all the curses because it wasn't B'chukosai Teilechu, but it was B'chukosai Timasu. And this is our response as we try to understand and wrap our heads around the Churban, and we realize that the only one to blame for the Churban is really for ourselves. I've mentioned this story in the past when I was a rabbi in Washington Heights before I came to this neighborhood. I mentioned it not so long ago. There was a fellow in my congregation who had a fire in his apartment right off 185th Street, and they called him to give him chizuk, and he, you know, came from a little bit of a different background. And I said to him the phrase that, you know, having come not so long ago from Lakewood, was a common phrase that would be used, Ozaina Kapara. Maybe I said it in English. It should be a kapara. And wow, Rabbi Orlean, How dare you accuse me of being a sinner? How dare you accuse me that the fire that I had in my apartment is because of my sins? How dare you accuse me, Rabbi Orlean? I was trying to comfort. I was trying to make, you know, I'm sorry that it happened. So it was Zalzaina Kapara. And he thought I was accusing him of being a sinner. I'm not saying he is. I'm not saying he was. But that's the authentic Jewish attitude, is that Yifash Bish B'masa, when something happens, not that it's our place ever, 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 whenever you see anybody in pain, Chas V'Shalom, to never say, it's because you did this, it's because you did this. When you become a Navi, you have the right to do that. But until you become a Navi, don't ever dare do that. But yet we realize, whatever happens, it's not that I did something wrong, but how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu use this to prompt me to grow? Person Rachman Aslan finds that they're sick. They don't have to think of themselves as a sinner. But they could say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending this so that I could perhaps find some way that I could improve my life. Let it be a growth process. Whatever Sarah person finds, let it be an opportunity for them to climb higher, for them to come closer. After asking all the questions, by the way, the postscript is that he called me later, he apologized. Now he's a Rebbe. Dom's in a Hasidus Shtibel in Boston. Kids have payas, sends them to a cheder, the Boston cheder. I assume now he knows Zozaina Kapara. That's the postscript of the story. And that has to be our attitude as we try to wrap our minds to try to begin to understand a little bit about what's happening. We realize that we have to turn inwards and see what can we do to grow? What can we do to improve? What concrete steps can we do to take ourselves out of Imbechukosai Timasu and into Imbechukosai Telechu? Shatu Amelim Batorah, as Rashi says, Kina Tess. Echa Sifarti Mirasha Sahishlifu. We continue with Kina Yud Aleph, Vayikonin Yirmiyahu Al Yoshiyahu, which is really, I encourage you to read the bottom in the art scroll, is really the most important Kina that we say. The Pasuk says in Divrei Hayam in the following, Vayikonin Yirmiyahu Al Yoshiyahu, the Yirmiyahu Navi, the author of Echa, of course, the Navi who prophesied the destruction of Churban Bayis Rishon, and who wrote Echa following Churban Bayis Rishon, who lived through the Churban Bayis Rishon. After Yoshiyahu was killed, Yirmiyahu wrote a kina. Vayomru kol ha-shorim v'hashos, and all the singers included b'kino sem al Yoshiyahu ad hayom. And they all sang a kina lamenting Yoshiyahu's murder, death. And Yirmiyahu established Vayitznum l'chok al Yisrael. That Yirmiyahu established that it should be a chok al Yisrael. What does that mean? That it should be a chok al Yisrael. Rashi in Divrei Hayamim explains that Yirmiyahu established the following chok for all of Jewish history. Says Rashi in Divrei Hayamim, Kishem izdamein lahem shum tzar b'chiyah. Whenever there will be a situation for which we cry, for which we cry on whatever has occurred, we should also be mazkir this tsar alongside with it. The tsar, this loss of Yoshiyahu Hanavi, Yoshiyahu HaMelech, alongside whatever else we're crying for. Continues Rashi, Dugma B'Tisha B'Av, for example, Tisha B'Av. Shemazkirim Kinos, that we recite Kinos, Al HaHarugim B'Gzeros She'iru B'Yameinu, for all the murders that happened in our time. He's talking about the Crusades. Tisha B'Av in France, they said kinos that had been written a year or two prior to their recitation, just like we do for the Holocaust. That's what Rashi says. And Rashi continues, so too, Kain Yivkiyun Amos Mosh Yoshiyahu. Why is it that we cry for Yoshiyahu? Who was Yoshiyahu? Yoshiyahu grew up, wasn't from, was ignorant. He was a melech. His grandfather, Menashe, had a love affair with Avodah Zarah and planted Avodah Zarah everywhere in Eretz Yisrael, even in the Beis HaMikdash. Yoshiyahu's father, Amnon, Amon was also an Oved Avodah Zarah. So much so that when Yoshio grew up, he didn't know anything about Torah. It's hard to imagine. Melech Yisrael in Bayis Rishon didn't know anything about Torah. It's hard to wrap our heads around what that means, what it could mean. Much has been written on that. Anyway, one day while they're doing repairs in the Bay in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they come across the Sefer Torah. It happens to be opened up to the words, Arash Lo Yakum Isteri HaTorah Azos. And Yoshio hears those words, gets terrified. He didn't know any of this stuff. And he raised his hand, Aleinu LaHapkin, we have to do this. We have to do what it says in the Torah. And he sparks a mass tshuva movement like has never been done before and brings Klal Yisrael like a swing of a pendulum from being Oved Avodah Zarah in all of the corners to being Ovdei Hashem with mandatory Avodas Hashem. It wasn't just a choice, an invitation. He was the greatest Mekarev of all time. I don't know, maybe except for Haman. He was the greatest Mekarev of all time. And that's why we have to feel the pain of his loss. That's why Yirmiyahu says that we have to recite a kina for Yoshiyahu's death. But maybe Yirmiyahu wants us to recite a kina for Yoshiyahu's death because there's another lesson to learn from Yoshiyahu's death. Because Yoshiyahu's death came about at a certain point in his reign, when as this kina is going to specify in the letter Dalid, Yoshiyahu thought he had successfully uprooted all the Avodah Zarah from Eretz Yisrael. And of course, there was this very ingenious plot of those Jews who were still connected to Avodah Zarah, didn't want to let it go. They put half of the Avodah Zarah behind one door and half of the Avodah Zarah behind their other door, such that when the king's messengers would burst into the house and the doors would swing open, of course, those would be covered over by the wall. Imagine two swinging doors that open up. And Yoshio thought that he had uprooted Avodah Zarah, and he thought that we were doing Ratzon Hashem, and therefore he thought we should be zocha to the brachas of Chever lo yavor b'aretzachem, lo savor b'aretzachem. And therefore, when Paro Necho wanted to trespass through Eretz Yisrael to get from the southwest, from where Egypt is to where Syria is, wanted to use Eretz Yisrael as the shortcut, Yoshio was so confident that we're doing Ratzon Hashem, that we have the brachos of Lo Yavor Cherev B'Aretzachem, and therefore he stood firm instead of bowing in the face of Paro Necho of coming from Mitzrayim, allowing him to trespass. He said, no, we have a bracha from Hashem that if we do Ratzon Hashem, we'll Cherev Lo Yavor B'Aretzachem, even not to fight against us, but even to pass through us. And Yirmiyahu said, Yoshio HaMelech, I know you're excited about your achievements, but you haven't been as successful as you think you have. Hashem is not ready to grant you that promise. And Yoshiyahu, in his misdirected emuna, you hear that? His misdirected emuna, how weird that is. He had so much emuna that Hashem will fulfill his promises that he didn't listen to the Navi. You meet people like that. They're so confident of what halacha should be and what the Torah should say, they're so confident about it that they don't need to listen to what the Rabbanim say. Interesting perspective. That was Yoshio's mistake. For that, Yoshio died. He stood firm, confident that Hashem would protect him from the arrows of Paro and his bowmen. And of course, 300 arrows, like a matarala chait, like a bullseye, pierced his body, as it says in Tzadi. Sadu v'samu kamatarolach itzim, like a bullseye for their arrows. Vayizriku bo shlosh me'os chitz, and 300 arrows. And then at the end of the next paragraph, right after Reish, Ruach svasav hivtzami piyud, his last breaths emanated from his mouth. And for these words, perhaps, the next line, perhaps, is why Yirmiyahu HaNavi was misakin that for all generations, we should read this kina, to learn the lesson that Yoshiyahu taught us, but taught us when it was too late as his life was expiring, to teach us that as he was being killed, tzadik hu Hashem. Ki marisi pihu. I'm not right. Not that Hashem messed up and I'm right, but ultimately as Yoshiyahu's life was snuffed out because of his misdirected zeal. He recognized Tzadiku Hashem Kimarisi Pihu. But sometimes we wonder, what's really the point of saying kinos? On a certain level, it's like crying over spilt milk. There's no point in crying over spilt milk. If you look in the fifth to last line of the kina, sixth to last line and fifth to last line, points out what Chazal tell us, that for 22 years, Tala Be'esim Rishtai Meharos Shasos, 22 years, the Beis HaMikdash was able to be elongated. Why? Because there was a kina to commemorate his death. Apparently, when we hear, when we react, and we express pain over the passing of a tzaddik, or the passing of a gadol, or the passing of somebody who's worth crying for, and we do cry, we do lament, we do maspid, that itself is a zechus to build the Beis HaMikdash, to keep the Beis HaMikdash from being destroyed. When you hear somebody, Yeshiva World News, so-and-so died, you don't really know that person. So you could say, I never heard that name, so I'll flip to the next one. Or you could take a moment to feel the loss of a tzaddik. That's why this kina is so important, because it shows the capacity that we do to, through our kinos, build and create. Shows our capacity for teshuva, adichtucha v'shal nefesh, through the last breath. And the dangers of ignoring our Nevi'im, whatever Nevi'im we have in our generation, whatever Torah leaders HaKadosh Baruch gives us for our generation. And finally, it shows us the greatness of somebody who dedicates himself, not focusing just on his own Shmiras HaMitzvahs, but focusing on Klal Yisrael's, focus on Kiruv. When he says that we have to get everybody to do Ratzon Hashem, not just myself. And with that, we offer our Divrei Hesped for Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Kino Yud Aleph. Vayikonen Yirmiyahu al Yoshiyahu. Echa Eli Konenu Melech. We've been here for 3/4 of an hour. And I don't know if you realize, but I don't think I said the word Beis HaMikdash. In the kinos, we haven't really focused on the Beis HaMikdash until now. Kini Yud Beis, Ahali, my tent, Asher Ta'avta, that you desired, Adlo Brachos, before you created the world. Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted the Beis HaMikdash even before he created the world, which means that it's the tachlis of the world. I'd like to share with you an incredible Medrash Tanchuma. In Parshas Truma, described, which of course speaks about the mitzvah to build the Mishkan. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, Asei Li Mishkan. Why? She'ani Mis'ave Lishkon Eitzel B'ni. Instead of building a house for his daughter, his son, in his neighborhood, he says, let my children live wherever they're going to live. I'm going to move. I'm going to buy an apartment near them. Sounds great, right? You know who was angry, though? You know who was bothered? You know who felt it wasn't fair? Shamu Malachi Asharis came. And they say, Ribono Shalolam, Lama Taminiach El Yonim, why are you leaving us? We're perfect. We do what you wish. We do your will. Why are you going down? V'yari L'tachtonim. Shivchachahu Shetei B'Hashamayim. You should stay up here in heaven. As the Pasuk says, T'nohotcha Al Hashamayim. What did HaKadosh Baruch respond to those malachim? I swear, he says to them, Re'u ma ani mechabev es hatachtonim. Look how much I love those who are below. The yored, and he goes down, kivayachol, v'shochein tachas yirios izim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts himself kivayachol under a cover of goat hides. It's a little bit hard to understand the concept of a Beis HaMikdash. I can't understand it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is me'al zman, me'al makom. He's infinite. He's not bound by space. How could he say, make me a house? a physical house with dimensions. It's something that we can't understand. But there's one thing that I see, even though I don't understand. I see that he wants to, kivayachol. He wants to be with us. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to be with us. That's the Beis HaMikdash. He wants to be with us. You look at the third line of Kinu Yud Beis. Lama lanetzach, why for so long has the Makam HaMikdash been shudat, been stolen, biyad shodadim, in the hands of thieves? Look at the third line of the next paragraph. Lama netzach tsumas biyad tsarim. Why is the Beis HaMikdash, the Makam HaMikdash, is hand over in the hands of those who cause of tsaris? Go to the third line of the next paragraph. Lama lanetzach, why has it been so long? Ura biyad arelim, that your Beis HaMikdash, the Makam HaMikdash, temple mount is in the hands of arelim. Look at the third line of the next paragraph. Lama lanetzach moas, the Beis HaMikdash, the Makam HaMikdash, has become abominable in the hands of Maritim who rebel against you. Look at the third line of the next paragraph. Lama lanetzach yua biyad yihirim, why is it in the hands of those who are arrogant? This kina is just as true then as it is now. I'll share with you a recent article. The issue of Solomon's temple, or what the Jews call the Temple Mount, is nothing but a bundle of historically unfounded claims, declared Khaled El-Khaldi, a professor at Gaza's Islamic University. It's a dream, it's a legend the Jews made up to claim exclusive ownership of the land, which religion and history refute time after time, added El-Khaldi, who happens to serve on the Hamas Shura Council, the terrorist group's main consultative body. The fabricated temple was invented to serve their narrative, he stated, without a trace of irony. El-Khaldi claimed that mainstream Jewish opinion is divided on the historic whereabouts of the temple. Some say it was in Shechem, not Jerusalem. Some say it's in Beitin, north of Jerusalem. Others talk about other places. It only proves that all of their claims are bogus. What's more, until now, not a single piece of archaeological evidence of its existence has ever been found, he claimed. Would you invest in a nice beachfront property in Bell Harbor on October 28th, 2012, the day before Hurricane Sandy touched down? Parshas Behar tells the story of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. And Yirmiyahu HaNavi was where? He was in prison. Why was Yirmiyahu HaNavi in prison? Yirmiyahu HaNavi, the author of Eicha, the one who prophesied the Churban HaBayis, why was he in prison? He was the Navi Yisrael. Because the Melech didn't like what he had to say. Interesting, huh? When you say what people don't like, instead of listening to the truth, it's easier to just throw you in jail. Is that the time to invest in a house in Bell Harbor? Is that the time? As Yirmiyahu is telling us that the destruction is about to come, that the Nebuchadnezzar are already sieging Yerushalayim, Yirmiyahu is told by Kodesh Baruch Hu, I want you to invest in a real estate investment in Yerushalayim. Remember, Yerushalayim is under siege. Nebuchadnezzar, tens of thousands of soldiers. I want you to buy fields of the Jerusalem real estate, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yirmiyahu. And not only that, I want you to make sure that it's a deal that stands with Edim, with the Shtaraya. We learn all the halachas of Shtar from this story, Sefer HaMikna. And Yirmiyahu drafts that Shtar, hands it over to the Sofer, his Sofer Baruch Ben Neriah, and demands of Baruch Ben Neriah to store the contract safely in a satin b'chli cheres l'mani amdu yamim rabim, so that this shtar about buying and owning the real estate of Yerushalayim will be able to last for a long time. Okay, what's the point of buying land to turn over to Nebuchadnezzar? What's the point of having witnesses? Even if they'll live, they'll be thrown to galus probably forever. Yirmiyahu asks this to Hashem. He says, HaKadosh Baruch, what in the world are you asking me to do? It doesn't make sense. We're about to be destroyed. What do you need a riot that I own property in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, as it's about to be destroyed? You're already giving this city over to the hands of the enemies. That's what Yirmiyahu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to Yirmiyahu at the end of that perek that you're missing the point. Ani Hashem Elokei Kol Basar Hamimeni Pali Kol Davar. Is there anything that I can't do? You're saying it doesn't make sense, and you're right, it doesn't make sense, but that's because you're looking at it through the eyes of a Basar Adam, through the eyes of causality, through the eyes of a historian. Things don't make sense. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not bound by causality. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not bound by history. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not bound by anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could write the rest of the pages of history however he wishes to. And that's why he tells Yirmiyahu, I want you to draft those star by that land because I'm bringing you back. It might be a while till you get back, but I'm bringing you back to Hamakom Hazeh. That's the end of the Haftorah. But the Haftorah continues 2,500 years later, to the year 1980. That's the real end of the Haftorah. 1980, in an archaeological dig, I've mentioned this here in Shul, in the city of David, near David, which might have been one of the palaces during the first Beis Hamikdash. Just a short walk from the cult, there was an archive that they found, an archive full of ashes from the fires that destroyed everything that was combustible. But fire destroys paper, it destroys parchment. But what does it do to clay? It hardens clay. What does it do to shtaros that are inside, to not shtaros perhaps, what does it do to clay things that are inside clay boxes? It makes them hard. And there was one jug that was found in Ir David that was perhaps one of the greatest archaeological finds in all of human history. 51 bulle. A bulla is like a ring, like a signet ring that somebody who wants to, like, you know, like Achashverosh gave to Haman and that was given to Mordechai. You press it into the clay, and this shows that you're the author of something, a little impression of clay to seal things. Usually they would tie a string around it and put the clay marker, but of course any strings would have been destroyed by the fires. And on that piece of clay that they found in 1980 were four words. Libaruch ben Neria HaSofer. Libaruch ben Neria HaSofer. That Sofer Yirmiyahu HaNavi asked to please write the shtar that I'm going to buy back in Yerushalayim and put them in a jug. L'ma'an yamdu yamim rabim. That's the bulla that was found in 1980, 2,500 years after Yirmiyahu told Baruch ben Neria to please write the shtar and put it in a jug, l'man yamdu yamim rabim. Why don't you show that to Dr. El Khaled al something or other? That's what the last six words of that Nevua, that Haftorah for Parshas Behar, is Ki Ashivesh V'sam Nuhum Hashem. I'm going to bring Klal Yisrael back to Eretz Yisrael. Yerushalayim will be destroyed. True. Bnei Yisrael will be thrown to Golos. Also true. And things will happen for us as Yechidim, as Klal, that we don't understand. But we have to know Ashivesh V'sam Nuhum Hashem. I'll bring you back. And our question is when? When we'll be able to come back to see the binyan on that land that they accuse us of as having stolen. The first kina about the Beis Hamikdash, kina Yud Beis. Aliyah Sheretavta. We continue with kina Tes Zion, kina 16, Zecha Sheasa Titus, Zecha Sheasa Tzar Befnim. Remember what Titus did when he came to take over the Beis HaMikdash, based on the Gemara that tells the story very vividly. Shalaf Charbo, the second line, he drew his sword above Lefnai V'Lefnim, walked into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Fourth line, V'Gider Parochas, and he punctured the Parochas, he slit the Parochas. That was visible on both sides, Baal HaShtei Panim, that had two faces. And Chazal say that when he stabbed the Parochas and slit it, it started bleeding like an artery that was cut. And Titus thought that he killed Kivayachli, he killed Hashem himself. God is dead. Kasavar, the Gemara in Gittin says, Harag HaSatzon, he killed that Kodesh Baruch himself. How could Kodesh Baruch allow a human being to think and to give the impression for a human being to think that God is dead, Chas V'Shalom? Medrash Anecha says something incredible. Ba'osa Shah, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, Haya HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bocha. Hashem cries, Omer, and screams out, Ohili Me'a Sisi, what have I done? I put my Shechina down in the world for Klal Yisrael, and now that they're Rechote, I had to go back to my previous place. Chas V'Shalom Shah Yisi Schok LaGoyim. I'm to be ridiculed by the Goyim, right? We know some Goyim who've said that. Yeah, you were not doubting that you're the chosen people. You were the chosen people. You 100% were. But now there's a new covenant. You're no longer. Now you've been rejected. What terrible Chil Hashem that is, for which HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries. At that moment, B'matatron, some great malach, the highest of the highest of the malachim, sees HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kivayachal crying, whatever these words mean. We don't understand what these words mean. And the Matatron pleads in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Ribono Shel Olam, you can't cry. Let me cry instead of you. Aniyav Kevula Talo Sivke, says the Medrash Anecha. Oh my Lord, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to this Matatron Malach. Im Ein Atome Niach Li Livkos, if you don't allow me to cry like I want to, I'll just go somewhere else. I'll go somewhere, some higher celestial fear where you don't have the rights to go that are beyond your security clearance up in the heavens. Ve'evka, and I will cry there. As it says in Pasuk in Yirmiyah, Tivken Ashi b'pnei geval, cry b'mistarim. Do you hear what it says? It doesn't just say that Kodesh Baruch Hu cries as we're sent into Galus, as this Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. It says that even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu has offered the relief to switch with some other whatever to cry on his behalf, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, I want to cry. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to cry? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to let Titus think that God is dead? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu suffer this terrible Chilul Hashem? He does it to teach us. He endures the worst of the worst of Chil Hashem to teach us that he is crying with us. To teach us that when we are in pain, he, Kivayachal, is also in pain. The very beginning of Maseches Brachos, Rabbi Yossi tells the story, Pamachas Hayisi Mahalech Baderech. I'm walking on the way, v'nechnasti l'churva achas mi'churvos Yushalayim l'hispalel. I entered one of the destroyed buildings in Yerushalayim to daven, by Eliyahu Zach Latov. Eliyahu Navi stood guard and allowed me to finish my davening. And afterwards, he asked me, "Bini, makol shamata b'chur v'zu? What did you hear as you were davening in this building of this that was destroyed?" I told him, "This is what I heard. I heard a voice come from the heavens. Malo la'av shehigla esbana. What pain is it for a father who had to send his son out of the house?" You know, the pain of a parent who has to send their child out of a house. Probably more painful than the next half. V'ayilahem labanim shagolu mi'al shulchan aviyam. The children who are sent out, how do they feel being thrown out of their parents' house? But it's more painful for the parent who has to send their child away. Kadosh Baruch Hu first appeared to Moshe, not in a great Eitz Erez, but in a lowly Sneh. If we're being killed, Kadosh Baruch Hu is being killed. And we say, Hashem, you look like you're dead. Where were you when we were beaten by the Bolsheviks and we were freezing in Siberia? We were starving to death in the concentration camps. And we were burned at the stakes in the Spanish Inquisition and burned alive in the gas chambers, then burned again the crematoria to make sure there would be no Kever Yisrael. Where were you? And the answer is that you were being beaten by the Bolsheviks and you were freezing in Siberia and you were freezing to death in the concentration camps and you were burned to death in the Inquisition. You were being burned in the gas chambers and you were being burned in the crematoria with us 100% time and time and time and time again. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to cry. He wants to cry. Yalkut Shimoni says terrifying words. Says terrifying words that when the time came to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, he tells Yirmiyah HaNavi, you know what I'm like today? I'm like a man who has a single child, one precious child born after so many years of waiting. And I was zochet to marry him off. And my son, my single, my only child died in the middle of my son's wedding. Please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu begs of Yirmiyah HaNavi, Lech, kro Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe, Mikivrayim. Kihem Yodim Livkos. Go ask Avram Avinu, Moshe Rabbeinu. They know how to cry. Please call them to cry. And they all get up. Yirmiyahu identifies where they are. Some of them were in Keverach, were in Meras HaMachpelah. Moshe Rabbeinu was a little harder to find. Okay. Hashem directs Yirmiyahu to find Moshe Rabbeinu. Goes to wake up Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, well, what do you want? What do you want from me? Why am I being called up to Shemayim? Why being called to Hashem? They said to Ben Amram, don't you know that Beis HaMikdash is standing and now it's being destroyed? And Bnei Yisrael are going to Golus? You're being called to Lispos V'Livkos. Miyad Kora Bigdei Kavod Shehelbisha HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe raised Kriya. Not on a shirt, not on a jacket, but the big day kavod. Who could imagine what the big day kavod that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him, this spiritual envelopment of glory that HaKadosh, he ripped that. That means that even the Ruchnius, Moshe felt that even the Ruchnius is being destroyed, was being taken away, and Moshe cries and screams. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks down. Listen to these frightening words. Kevan Shirao Sam HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees the Avos davening, crying for their children. Listen to what it says. I don't know what these words mean. We can't know what it means. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chogar Sak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu donned the sackcloth. V'tolash B'saron, pulled out his hair. When I got bald, I thought at least I could be HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have hair, and I don't have hair either. I see I don't even have that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu pulled out his hair. How can we say such words about HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Yalkut Shimoni says, Vilmali Mikra, if it wasn't the Pasuk that said this, we wouldn't be able to say that. As the Pasuk says, V'karchov, L'achkor Sak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels the pain, as much pain as we are in, as much pain as we ever, ever, ever experience. We have to remember every moment, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is equally in pain with us, whatever nechama that's worth. Kina Tes Zayim, Zachar Sha'asa Tsar Bifnim.
Yes.
The next Kina, Kina Yud Zayin, Im Tachan and Hashim Piryam, is the most explicit, the most vivid, the most visceral. I don't even know if it's healthy for a child under 16, 17 years old to say it. Unless you just say it without caring, without understanding what the words mean. The words themselves are haunting. And what's even more than haunting is this is not a Navi written in metaphor. This is a Nevuah that is precise. It was a Nevuah that was fulfilled in precision. It was reports of what actually did happen. Yes, when people are starving and they have a dead child, it's more important to cut the child up and to cook him for supper than to give him Kever Yisrael. Yes, that same child in the third line of Medudin, Tvachim, Tvachim, that you say you come up from camp and yeah, you grew a half an inch. That same child, it's not they didn't love their child. Nashim Rachmanios in the second line, it's not that the women were Achzarios, but there's no choice. In the fourth line, how the hair is tied to the back of horses that are let loose. The fifth line, in Tidbak, Lishon Yonek, Lechech, Bitsimaon, a baby whose palate is so dried out, and the cattle cars for 3 days without anything to drink during the summer. You're looking at your watches to see when the fast is over. You missed your breakfast, you missed your coffee, it's already 11 a.m. You're not going to be able to stand so easily for mincha. You'll sit. You're going to be tired. You'll be thirsty. Because you've been sitting on a chair in an air-conditioned room for 3-4 hours. Oy vey, poor baby. Try 3 days in a cattle car with another 400 people during July without air conditioning or water. Not having drank Gatorade yesterday afternoon.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
I'd like to share with you an eyewitness account of the Chevron massacre of 1929. Chevron was the biggest yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, had 200 Talmidim. It was known as the place to go when you wanted to be Golem Malkum Torah. And it happened on a Shabbos. This Shabbos morning, I walked from my lodging to Lazarovsky home. Looking out my window, I watched as carloads of Arab sheikhs traveled towards Baras and Machpelah, heading towards a large mosque there. We daven shachar in the Lazarovsky home, too frightened to step outside. We read the parasha from Chumash because we didn't have a Sefer Torah with us. By the time we reached Musaf, everyone was terrified. We had a gut feeling that something terrible was about to take place. I could see the hill across the valley. Hordes of Arab peasants were trekking down the hill, heading straight for Chevron. There must have been hundreds of them, maybe even thousands. They spilled into the streets singing war songs. Mrs. Lazarovsky begged us to sit down and eat the Shabbos Seudah, but before she even finished her sentence, blood-curdling shouts pierced the air. Thousands of bloodthirsty Arabs began stampeding towards the Jewish home. We heard banging and more screaming. Residents ran outside, hoping to find shelter in the municipality's nearby health clinic. Unfortunately, once outside, they met up with raged masses. As they ran back to the house, they tried catching the attention of the British policeman who stood nearby. But the policeman didn't move a muscle. Meanwhile, the rioters had filled the house. They pounced on the head of the family and killed him with their knives. From our post on the top floor, we heard loud banging on the front gate. Had our turn come, the fear was tangible. Every person in the house shook uncontrollably. With superhuman strength, I lifted a long, heavy bed on my back and placed in the space between the front door and the inner steps leading up to the second floor we were all hiding. The Arab riders refused to give up. They headed to the house next door. The Arab landlord, our net landlord, lived in that house. They wanted to go up to his roof, jump onto our roof, and break into our house that way. Without losing a moment, I jumped from our roof to the Arab landlord's roof and began speaking convincingly, begging him not to acquiesce to their request. Using the little Arabic that I knew, I managed to communicate with him, and he agreed not to let the mob into his house. His children, however, did not follow their father's example. They screamed out to the mob, "There's a Yahud there! There's a Yahud there!" I stood near the Arab's window trying to figure out what to do. The Arab mob noticed me and brought their hatchets down on the door. The argument between my Arab landlord assured me you have nothing to worry about. The arguments between my Arab and the mob intensified. The landlord told me to find a hiding place. I looked around. One of the pits used for household needs seemed like an excellent hiding place. The opening led to this place that was something like a cellar. I moved the boards that covered the opening, crawled inside, replaced the boards after me. After waiting in the pit for a few hours, we realized the storm had abated. We decided to leave our hiding place and return to Lazarovsky home. There was not a living soul on the street. The Shabbos table was still set. You know, in Nevelet Zion, we read of a Nevuah in Yeshaya. Nevelet Zion Goel, there will come a time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will redeem us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says what we're familiar with. This is my bris. The ruach that I put in you, the Torah that I teach you, lo yamushu mipicha, mipi zaracha, mipi zera zaracha. Me'atov ad olam. And the Gemara Bava Metzia focuses on this promise that if you have Torah in your mouth, in the mouth of your child and your grandchild, three generations, it will be forever. Kol shu tamil chacham, ubenot tamil chacham, bebenot tamil chacham, promises the Gemara Bava Metzia, shuv ein Torah pasekas mizar la'olam, based on this pasuk. Back to our show. When I got to Lazarovsky home, Mrs. Lazarovsky's two sons had been murdered. One of their young daughters, Devora, and Rabbi Lazarovsky's father-in-law, Aryeh Leib Gudalevsky, were also murdered. Three generations at once. Instead of Lo Yamushu Mipicha, Mipizaracha, Mipizaracha, there are three generations murdered at once. We turn to Kina Yud Zayin and realize that it's not metaphor. Every one of these things happened. We'll continue with Kina Yud Tes. Kina Yud Tes is L'cha Hashem Atzdak V'lanu Boshes Haponim. Finally, we realize and we understand that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did was, as hard as it is to say, was right. And we, L'anu Boshes Haponim, we are the ones in the wrong. It's a fascinating human psychology that I see time and again. Sometimes people call me with a financial argument that they have with somebody, and you speak to them, and they're so right. They're so right. And the other person is so wrong. The funny thing is that when you speak to the other person, they're so right, and the other one is so wrong. And the same thing happens when it comes to shalom bias issues. You speak to one of them and, oh my gosh, you're so right. You're so right. They're so terrible. You're so good. Then you speak to the other party. And you know what you realize? You're so right. They're so terrible. You're so good. People see things only through their own lenses. People say things only based on their perspectives and not the other party's perspectives. And that's exactly the last two lines of the Kina that we just recited. The Mekonein points out, yeah, Im Tochanu Nashim Piryam, we cry and cry and cry, oh, yeah, yeah, look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done to us. That we say. Mashmiyim, we say that and we cry about that. We forget the reason. We forget that, yeah, it's because that we did something wrong. But that which we killed, a kohen v'navi, the Beis Hamikdash, that lo mashmiyim, they don't tell you. You get half a picture. You're presented with half a picture. People complain. They complain of all the tzaris that others are doing to them, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing to them. They don't think of the tzaris that they're causing others. They don't think of the laxity that they are expressing in their own weak kiyum ha-mitzvos. coming off that at the end of Yud Zayin is the perfect segue into Kina Yud Tes, where we contrast line by line all the good things that Hashem did to us and our shame, our boshes upon him, and all of our weaknesses, all the things that we did wrong. Obviously, the message is clear that the way the Beis HaMikdash is to be rebuilt is through our tshuva. L'shavei peshav Yaakov. By doing tshuva, by improving ourselves, that's how the geula will come. Maran Tainis, Daf Chav Tes, tells a story of what exactly happened. What was the timeline of Churban Beis HaMikdash? B'shiva, on the seventh day of Av, Nichnesu Nachrim Lehechal, they entered the Beis HaMikdash. They partied. They didn't have to go to the village. They were able to party in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Did all kinds of disgusting things. Shvi, Shemini for 2 days, seventh and eighth day. Shri on the ninth day of Av, that's this afternoon. Samacha Chashecha, Tisha B'Av late in the afternoon. Hitzisu Bo Esaur. They ignited the Beis HaMikdash on fire. V'hayadolek, v'holek, kol hayom kulo. That's why Rabbi Yochanan said, you don't pass like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, ilmala hayisi bosodur. If I would have been in that generation, I would have instituted Tisha B'Av. I wouldn't have instituted Tisha B'Av. I would have instituted Yud B'Av. Lo kvativ ela ba'asiri, mipnei sheruba shalheichel bo nisraf. So why do we not pass like Rabbi Yochanan? Why don't we commemorate the actual Churban that most of it took place indeed on the 10th of Av? We, concludes the Gemara, Aschalta de Puranusa Adifa, we follow when it began. It was set into motion on the 9th to this afternoon, late in the afternoon today. That's when the Churban actually happened. That's when it's set into motion. And that's what we commemorate, not the actual destruction itself. So I ask you a very simple question, Rabbi Osei. The primary Churban happened on Yud. The lighting of the Beis HaMikdash happened later in the afternoon today. And yet, what are we going to do this afternoon? After Chatzos, we'll put the parochas back. We'll sit on high chairs. We'll put on our tefillin. We finish doing our kinos. But see, Meyer Zilberberg asks, wait a second, shouldn't the Avelus intensify as we get closer on Tisha B'Av, closer and closer and closer to that moment when they took the match and lit the fire? And instead, we switch modes. And he says something incredible. He says, because once they lit the fire, you know what happened? You know what all of a sudden happened when they lit the fire? Klal Yisrael realized that it's time to do tshuva. And because we realize that it's time to do tshuva, for that reason, we're able to sit on chairs and put the parochas back and start putting on our tefillin, because we realized, you know what it's like? It's like a couple that's not getting along so well. And you know when they realize that they have to change? They realize when the other one walks out the door. Now they're ready to make changes in their attitude, in their actions. There's a contradiction in Chazal that we don't understand. We know that the Kruvim, when Bnei Yisrael would walk into Yerushalayim 3 times a year, the Kohanim would open up the parochas. Ru'uchi baslam lifnei hamakom. Look at the two Kruvim hugging each other. Like Hashem loves you. That's what would be when Klal Yisrael were doing Ratzon Hashem, and when it was the inverse, when we weren't doing Ratzon Hashem, the two Kruvim were turned aside, not looking into one another's eyes. And yet, the Gemara tells us, Yumach Nandalad Amid Beis, when enemies entered Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Kruvim were hugging each other. And the Shita Mikubetz asked, how could it be? What do you mean? How could it be? How could they be hugging each other at the time of Churban HaBayis, when we were destroyed because we weren't doing Ratzon Hashem? Tzadik HaKohen says, very simply, Because once the Beis HaMikdash started to burn, once they took over, once they started ransacking the Beis HaMikdash, Klal Yisrael started doing tshuva. And yes, when we started doing tshuva, the Kruvim started hugging one another. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loved us once again. So if that's the case, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us once again, then why did it have to burn? Why couldn't our tshuva have worked? And the answer is because we missed the opportunity. Because we missed the window. There's a certain point at which if you catch it, you nip it in the bud, it will work. But after a certain point, of course tshuva works. Adich tuchas shel nefesh, like we learned from Yoshiyahu. Tshuva always works. But it might not hold back whatever has already been set into motion. And therefore, the destruction was already set into motion, even though, yeah, we did tshuva, but we did tshuva too late. You know what time it is for us right now? It's time for us to do tshuva. Because we don't know when we have windows of opportunity. We don't know when we could fix things and when it will be too late. And if we take advantage of doing tshuva, of recognizing lanu lecha Hashem atzdak, lanu boshes haponim, then we can have what we ask in the second to last line of Eicha, Hashiveinu Hashem Elecha v'nashuva Chadesh Yomeinu kekedem Kina Yutes v'chadana. We'll continue with Kina Chaf Aleph Arzei HaLevanon Adirei HaTorah Baal Treisim B'Mishnah V'Gemara talks about the Asara Haruge Malchus. And here we focus on a specific loss, the loss of our Talmidei Chachamim, the loss of our Tzaddikim, the loss of the creme de la creme of Jewish history, those who teach us, those who lead us, those who live lives informed, every action of theirs informed by Ratzon Hashem, and to the extent to which their lives are the expression of Ratzon Hashem, to that extent, the loss of their lives is the snuffing out of Ratzon Hashem in this world. There's no question it's the Koach HaTorah that's kept us throughout the past 2,000 years. We didn't have an Eretz Yisrael. You think everyone speaks Yiddish? That's because you're very provincial, because you don't get out much. A lot of people who speak Syrian and Spanish and Ladino, we didn't all have the same language. What kept us alive wasn't our language. We all eat gefilte fish and shalom dan kugel? No. I have lots of students who never tasted shalant and never saw gefilte fish in their life. So what is it that kept us alive for 2,000 years? There's no other nation in the world that has done that. There's one thing, and it's the Torah. Torah, and that's the only thing that's kept us alive. We have the same Torah. A little minhag is a little different here or there between the Temanim and the Sfaradim and the this Sfaradim and the Persians and the Moroccans and the Iraqis and the Syrians and the Chalabis and the these and the those and the Galicianers and the Oberlanders and the, tiny minhaga, but ruba, the Torah is all the same. If you know how to learn, you can go to any yeshiva in the world. Doesn't matter how they pronounce their ayins and their chets and their cheses and their tufs and thufs and suz. You can talk and learn with any of them, because Torah is one, and Torah is what kept us. In Eicha, the third parak of Eicha, we say, Zos Ashiv el libi. I'll put Zos to my heart, al ken ochil, therefore I can hope for the future. What's Zos? And the Medrash in Eicha tells a story of what the word Zos refers to. Why is it that because of Zos, I have the right to hope for a future, a brighter future, a better future? And the Medrash tells a story of a king who married a fancy lady, a matrona. And wow, her ksuva, every woman's envy. Her ksuva was all kinds of houses and buildings and precious jewels, all kinds of incredible things that he promised her. And one day the Melech goes on a journey to Medinat Hayam. He's supposed to come back a month later. A month passes, 2 months pass, 3 months pass. She has no idea where her husband, the king, is. All of her neighbors come to comfort her and say, he ain't ever coming back. He found a prettier princess. He found a richer princess. Maybe he drowned. So she'd walk back into her house. She'd go back to her drawer, open up her ksuva, and read all the things that he promised her. Houses and jewels and properties. Miad hines misnachemes, and she's comforted, knowing that he's going to come back and do what he promised. Months later, Baha Melech, Amarla, he said to his wife, my dear, my beautiful wife, Ani Tamea, I wonder, I'm dumbfounded. Echim Tantali, Kol Osan Hashon, how are you able to wait for me for so many years? She responded, Adoni HaMelech, if not for the Ksuva Meruba, Shekasavta Venasatali, if you wouldn't have given me such a rich, such a precious Ksuva, Kfar Abduni Shechenosai, my neighbors would have convinced me to leave you, to leave the palace. Continues the Medrash. So too the Goyim pressure, oppress Klal Yisrael and says, your God has hid his face from you, has been misalik and shechina from you. That's the tenets of Christianity, isn't it? He ain't coming back. And Klal Yisrael cry in pain, wondering, maybe they're right. So what do? They go back inside and they read the ksuva. That's our ksuva, that's the love letter, that's our Kodesh Baruch Hu's promises of what he has in store for us, what our future will bring. All of a sudden, we are comforted. And there's going to come a time. There will come a time, sooner rather than later. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come to Klal Yisrael and say, my beautiful, dear, beloved princess, how did you do it? How did you stay faithful to me all these years? Vehein Omrim, we're going to respond to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ilulei Torascha Shenasata Lanu. If not for the Torah that you gave us, Kfar Avadnu Ha'umos, we would have baptized ourselves, we would have left you, we would have done all kinds of things. That, says the Medrash, is what the Paskin Eicha means. Zos Ashiv El Libi. What's Zos? Ein Zos El Torah, as it says, V'Zos HaTorah. Because of Torah, Al Kein Ochil, that's why I can hope. What gave us the strength to withstand these galus, these terrible years of galus, everything that we've faced? It's only one thing. It's because we believe in the promises of the Torah. We believe that there will be a Geula. It's the Koach HaTorah that has sustained us. The Koach of Mitzvos, and more than the Mitzvos, the Koach of knowing that there's going to come an end to our Tzaros and a Geula. And the Nevi'im promised us that everything that happens will be for a purpose that we will ultimately be Zochet to see. That's the Koach of the Torah. And that's why we have to elevate on a pedestal those who teach Torah, those who learn Torah, those who live for Torah. That's what we're about to do as we read about the Arzei Alvanu and the Asar HaRogei Malchus in the times of the Romans. The 24 out of the 36 people who were killed in Chevron were the Bnei Yeshiva of the Yeshivas Chevron. You know, I always thought that Thursday night Mishmar is you stay up in the Beis Medrash till 11 or 12 and you get Shalom and Kugel. I guess HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught us that that's not all Mishmar is about. Mishmar also means that while you're hitchhiking home, you get kidnapped and burned to death by Arabs. If your name is Naftali and you're 16 years old from Naphtali alone or Gilad, you're 16 years old from Talmud, or your name is Eyal, you're 19 years old from the city of Elad, that was what their Mishmar was. Or where my nephew learns America's Harav, the Mishmar massacre, the blood of his favorite children. We lay in Zos Chukas HaTorah, Adam Kiyomis Ba'ohel. I thought Adam Kiyomis Ba'ohel is supposed to be. That we're supposed to push ourselves to learn harder and harder. That we're supposed to be shot with bullets and bleed to death over our Gemaras, onto our Shtenders. I thought Mishmar is about Shalt and Kugel, not young mothers who raise their boys to Torah sitting Shiva. Shas, there's a lot of discussion about Dam. There's Dam Tohar, there's Dam Nida, there's Dam Evarim, Mishnah Krisis, there's Dam Shratzim, there's Dam Hatchol, there's Dam Halev, there's Dam Hakloyos. This Dam you get Alos Essay, Dam Hakishtayim, Dam Shratzim, Dam Ramasim. You don't get Kares. There's another kind of Dam. Dam Shanashama Yotzeba. You get Kares if you eat Dam Shanashama Yotzeba. I thought it was a sugya in Krisus. I thought it was a part of Shas that stays in Shas. I didn't realize that Dam Shanashama Yotzeba has to be intermingled with Shas by being blood-soaked of a 17-year-old's lifeless body of the Dam Shanashama Yotzeba into the Masechta that he's learning at a Mishmar in Merkaz HaRav. Does their blood also have to become part of Shas? Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, when a person suffers pain, endures pain, Shechina Ma'alashna Meres Kivyachol, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say as we, as his children, endure whatever we might, whatever pain we endure, psychological, emotional, mental, physical. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries out, Kalni Meroshi, Kalni Mizrahi, oh, my arm hurts, oh, I have a headache. Kivyachol, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu cries. Mishnah continues, Kavachomer al damam shel tzaddikim, the blood of tzaddikim, the pain that HaKadosh Baruch Hu endures, the blood of tzaddikim. Why do we have to look on the bottom of page 250, the last line on page 250, to learn about Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion? Makil Kihilos Bitzion, who would learn, gather with his friends, gather with his Talmidim in Yerushalayim, Yoshev Vidoresh with Sefer Torimo, he would learn with his Sefer Torah. And the Romans took that Sefer Torah and wrapped it around him and lit it on fire. Medrash tells us Rabbi Gamliel spoke about a yeshiva in Beitar. There's so many Jews living in Beitar. The smallest yeshiva had 300 students. And you know what they said as they saw the Romans surrounding them, surrounding Beitar to attack Beitar? This is a little bit after Churban HaBayis. The children said, you know what we're going to do? Im yavo hasonim aleinu, if the enemies come to attack us, we're going to go out and we're going to poke them. You can imagine your seven-year-old saying that, taking his water gun and saying, I'm not scared, we're going to go out and we're going to poke them. You know what the end of the story ended up happening? Because of our Averos, Karchu Kol Echad B'Sifro, they didn't have books like you and I had, they had scrolls. The Romans took each little boy, wrapped him in his scroll, V'sarfu Osam. That's the Medrash that the Rav of Vilna in 1929, 5 days after the massacre of Chevron, stood on the podium, stood on the bima in the shul in Vilna. I'll share with you another thought of his a little bit later, and said, that's exactly what happened in Chevron 5 days ago. B'sifreim asher b'yadeihem, in the form that they had in their hands, the benches that they were learning on, the shtenders that they were learning on, they were burnt with their shtenders, they were burnt with their svarim. It happened to Beitar. It happened in Yerushalayim. It happened in Chevron. And then come full circle, it happens in Yerushalayim again. These are our Arzei HaLevan and Adirei HaTorah. Gibore Korach, Amaleho Betara, Rachmana Litzlan, the fourth line, Damam Nishpach, Damam Nishpach, Kina Chaf Aleph. Next, Kina Chaf Beis, Hecharisha Meni Vadabera, basically saying, get away from me. Get away from me. I just need to cry. I'd like to draw your eyes in mine. It's the bottom of page 254. The third paragraph. The bottom line of page 254 in my version. V'nisvadu beprishas of Tara l'kadei shem agoldav anora. They awaited whatever community wrote this kina about the impending attack, where I guess most of them were killed out, save the one or two or few who were able to tell about it and write this kina. They knew it was coming. They knew it was coming their way. I don't know if it was in the time of the Crusades. Maybe it was later. Maybe it was earlier. They prepared themselves with precious utar lekadesh hagol d'vanor to fulfill the mitzvahs of seder rais of kiddush Hashem, like we just read of Rabbi Akiva's joy at his opportunity to fulfill that mitzvah with his life. Top of 256, if you have my version. V'ishes achiv chizku be'ezra, they would strengthen one another. Lihidavek b'yira tahora, to stick with themselves, with yira, with pure yira. Not to be tempted to bow down, not to be tempted to be baptized, not to be tempted to cross over the line. B'li kro ala avodah zarah, it's so easy. You don't have to be killed. We had so many opportunities. Just go to the mikvah. Just jump in the mikvah. And say that you believe in Jay and you're good. You don't have to suffer. You don't have to be poor. You don't have to die. Your children don't have to be killed. Just jump in the mikvah. And you'll be saved by Jay. That's all you got to do. Instead, they girded themselves with precious, with Tara, to fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa, so that they don't have to bow down to Avodah Zarah. They didn't have pity one on another. On whom? On their pride, on their joy, on the pupil of their eye, on the apple of their eye. Albanim tzfiras tifara, the glory, their glorious children. Aval azru gvuriyah say, but they girded themselves with great strength, lahalom, to crack, to smash rosh, to kill their own children. Complicated halachic sugya. It's one thing to die, not to do avodah zarah. Another thing to kill your children so they don't do avodah zarah. Complicated. We're not going to talk about the halachic aspects. It's not for this morning. And what did they tell their children as they snapped their spines in utter purity? Lo zachinu ligadelchem laTorah. If we don't have the zechus to raise you properly, then let us offer you as a karba nakrivchem ka'ola v'haktara, so that you and we together. They knew what would happen if the children would be left alive and the crusaders would come. They'd be the future crusaders, the future bishops. V'nizke machem la'ora, will be zoche together, father and son, mother and daughter together, to the ora, to the great olam haba, tzvuna, the hidden olam haba, main call that is beyond our imagination of whatever we could imagine, the schar that awaits for those who are dedicated, even when it's so hard. That attitude of lo zachinu gadelchem laTorah, of a parent's desire to raise his or her children, even through the last breaths. I want to share two brief stories that illustrate that same attitude, perhaps 900,000 years after this kina was written, with the same exact attitude. As the Kalevah Rebbe looked out of the window in his ghetto, he wondered what would come of the Eibishter's people. He knew that hundreds of children, hundreds were dying daily of hunger or disease, being rounded up, transported to camps where they'd be killed. But one strange sight caught his eye. Day after day, he noticed a little boy running along the train tracks, just at the edge of the ghetto, screaming. The child seemed to be repeating certain words over and over. After a number of days, after doing this for a short while, the boy returned to the ghetto. One day, the Rebbe approached the child and asked him what he was doing. A few days ago, the boy explained, my mother was taken away from me. She was grabbed by some soldiers, thrown into a train. I tried to get close to her, to be with her, but they didn't let me. They threw me to the floor. I tried to get up. The train started slowly pulling away. As I stood there crying, my mother called out to me and said, never forget my Yigula, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. The boy looked up at the Rebbe, the tears filling his mournful eyes. He said, Rebbe, I'm so worried I'm going to forget. Every day I go outside and I shout Shema Yisrael over and over as I run along those train tracks. That will make sure I won't forget. Fast forward 50 years. Remember the Sbarro's restaurant on the corner? Was it King George and what is it, Yecheskel? Yafo, King George. 1 minute people are eating lunch with their families. Second later, massive carnage, twisted metal, shattered glass, dead bodies, including an almost dead body of an 8-year-old girl named Tamara, thrown away from the table where she was eating with her father. Her father was also injured, tried to reach to her. He inched closer and closer, but it was hard because he was also severely injured. He reached onto her, held her hand. She tried to squeeze him. She wasn't able to. All she could say was, Ab, I'm scared, help me. The father held her hand and said, don't be scared. But he knew that his precious child was going to die. Repeat after me, he said to her. Shema Yisrael. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Echad. Next, Kina Chafei, is unique in its specificity. It specifies the city, it specifies the day, the date, the time of day. This was written in the time of the Crusades, three great cities of the Jewish Rhineland, home of the Bali Tosfos, massacred in the Crusades of 1096, Speyer on Ches Iyar of the year 1096, Worms on the 23rd of Iyar, where they Jews were hiding in the bishop's palace and they were attacked there. They were killed as they were signing Halal and Rosh Chodesh Sivan of 1096. And 3 days later, on Gimel Sivan, Mainz, Magenza, these cities had strong Jewish communities 1,000 years prior to these massacres of the Crusades. I saw somewhere, I don't remember where, over the past few days as I was preparing, that all of our halacha, basically all of the learning that we have, the halacha for Ashkenaz, comes from the French Baalei Tosfos. From that period, all the Tosfos that we have, they're all French Baalei Tosfos. There was an equal, if not maybe even a greater, Torah community in Germany, these cities that we're about to read about. Why don't we learn their Sfarim? Why don't we practice their halakhas that they taught us? And the answer is very simply, for two reasons. One, because they were all killed, and two, because whatever Svarim they have were all destroyed. The Crusades have determined the practices, the halachos, the minhagim, more than minhagim, the Shulchan Aruch that we follow is the way it is, only because we lost everybody about whom we read about, who read about in this kina. This kina has the famous line in my version, it's on page 274. Seven lines from the bottom. In 1942, November 1942, Jews in Eretz Yisrael found out and actually started to believe the atrocities that were transpiring in Europe. And Rav Herzog, the chief rabbi in 1942, is the one my father got smicha from a number of years later, organized the massive Yom Tzom and a Tefillah on December 2nd, 1942. It was 2 days before Hanukkah. He, together with the Ger Rebbe, in the Churva Shul, which we zocha as a community, us Shari Tefillah, to be connected with through the Zilberman's Kollel, and at the Kotel and around the world that day, 2 days before Hanukkah, was this Yom Tzom and Tefillah when they started understanding what exactly was happening. Right at that time, Rav Herzog visited the Brisker Rav in Yerushalayim, saying that we should make, trying to figure out what kind of Yom Tzom they should make. And of course, famously, the Brisker Rav responded by quoting this kina by heart, without opening up, because he knew it by heart. We don't have to add on another day of being broken, of destruction, because we already have Tisha B'Av. We don't need another day. Tisha B'Av is the catch-all. It's the Chalent day. Everything that happened, we understand, all emanates ultimately from the Chet HaMeraglim that we committed on this day. Secondly, from the Batei Mikdash, the Silik Shechina that occurred on this day, and everything that we endure is just an outgrowth of that. Here we'll read the blow by blow, day by day account of what happened in 1096 Iyar and Sivan. We'll jump to Kina Lamed Aleph, which we'll sing together in a moment. Ishtu Kadbir Kirbi, Mahalos Yalibi, a fire burns within me as I remember, Bitsesim Mitzrayim. A fire of joy, fire of elation. And then the next line, Kinim Ira Laman Azkira, but I'll arouse Kinim when I remember Bitsesim Yerushalayim. This Kina has 22 paragraphs of the Aleph Beis. Each paragraph is two lines. So there are 44 lines in this Kina. The first one talks about the beauty, the grandeur, the majesty, as we left Mitzrayim, and the contrast, the foil again, of the destruction, the sorrow, the avelus, as we left Yerushalayim, went into Gullus. You could take anything and look at it from two perspectives. Fire, look at Vav. Marek Vod Hashem, Keisho Chalas Lefonai, we had the pillar of fire guide us through the nights, Bitzesim in Mitzrayim. But you have swords of fire, Bitzesim Yerushalayim. Karbonos, look at Zion. We brought Zebach u'Mincha when I left Mitzrayim. When we left Yerushalayim, we were the Karbonos. Ches, Chagim v'Shabbosos, when I left Mitzrayim. Tainus v'Evel, when I left Yerushalayim. Camps, look at Tess. So we're camped in camps around the Mishkan. We know too well about other kinds of camps. Other kinds of camps. Camps that the author of this kina couldn't even imagine what the camps that we're more familiar with. Please join me. Eish to cad the kirby, Valasi, Ali, Bibit say, Mimitrayim. As we finished Bishuvi Lirushalayim, waiting for the Sasan and the Simcha without having any of the Yagam Vanacha, we'll turn to Tina Lamed Vav, Tzion, the first of eight Tzions. Rabbi Yehuda Levi, Tzion Halosish Ali L'Shalom Asirayach, won't you ask about the welfare of your prisoners, those Dorshei Shlomech, those who inquired about your Shalom, based on a Pasuk, Ein Doresh, Mechlal Dubai Drisha. Rabbi Yehuda Levi is expressing the love affair that he has with Yerushalayim, with Eretz Yisrael, and with anything to do with Eretz Yisrael. And he dreams of Eretz Yisrael floating through Eretz Yisrael, not just as a kina, but as an expression, as a hope. Imagine what it will be. And the kina sort of undulates like a pendulum back and forth between the sorrow of Galus and the mass and the majesty of the Geula that we're awaiting. Livkos and Seich, when I cry of your pain, Anisanim, I'm like a serpent, I'm like a dragon. But Eisech Alom Shivas Shivuseich, but when I dream of Klai Yisrael coming back to you from the Golos, Ani Chinor L'Shirayach, I'm like that violin to play all of your songs. But Tzion's charm, its beauty, is not independent. Its beauty is really manifest primarily and perhaps only when we are settled, when we are nestled safely within her, on page 330, about 60% down in my version. Eich yerav liachol v'shasos, how could I even appreciate food, drink, be'esach is at a moment when I see ki yischav ha'klavim es kfirayich, that the dogs are dragging your children, your young lions. Tzion's not beautiful when our enemies are dragging us. Oh, ma'or yom yihi masak le'eda, how could the beauty of a Israel son be sweet to me? Ba'od erab efi arvim, as I see in the mouths of the ravens flying overhead, the bitings from the corpse of my children of Klal Yisrael. In other words, as beautiful as Tzion is, it's only beautiful when we are there the way we should be, when we are there not being oppressed. I'd like to share with you now what in my eyes is the high point, the climax, the most incredible vart of this morning of Tisha B'Av for me. It was an insight, an incredibly powerful insight to me. I've been shaking since I read it. There's a great synagogue in Vilna. If you go there now, you'll find a basketball court and a kindergarten. And yes, it was intentionally that way. It's a place where they've been davening on that piece of land since the year 1440 at least. 1530, a shul was built there, another shul, the great synagogue of Vilna was built there in 1630. And it was there from 1630 to 1730 to 1830 to 1930. And a few years after 1930, as you can imagine, it no longer existed. And the Rav in 1929, and the Moritz Tzedek, the Maggid of Vilna, the Rav of that shul, was Rav Menachem Krakowski, and he gave a drasha on Chaf Gimel Av 1929, 5 days after the Chevra massacre that we spoke about a short while ago. Chevra massacres took place 9 days from now, in 1929. And he says, I'd like to share with you part of his drasha that he told the people in Vilna. Apparently this shul was big enough to hold 3,000 or 5,000 people on Yom HaNaraim. He said, we're about to say Yizkar for those who were killed in the massacre. And we know that they were all karbanos. And we know that before they were not just karbanos, they were karbanos tzibur. And we know that a korban needs vidui tshuva, right? You do smicha on the korban before you bring the korban. Therefore, before we mention, before we say yizkar, we have to, before we mention their names, we all have to do vidui. What a powerful idea. I can't tell you to, I can't suggest it as a good idea that before yizkar on yantif, we should say vidui, even if it's for relatives who are korbanos tzibur, because you can't be misvad on a yantif. But on a moed like today, we could do vidui. Let me share with you an English translation of his drasha, a few words of his drasha, with the incredible insight that has me shaking, and about which I'm still shaking. We're gathered within the ancient and holy walls of this shul, which remembers the persecutions of Klal Yisrael, remembers also the years of Tach V'Tat. Remember, that was in 1648. The shul was built in 1630. The same shul where they said kinas for Tach V'Tat 400 years earlier, 300 years earlier. We read in this week's parasha, Am Kadosh Atem Lashem Elokeichem. We've had many Kadoshim in our history. Kadoshim sacrificed their lives al Kiddush Hashem for the bris between Klal Yisrael and Avinu Shebat Shemayim. There have also been a different kind of Kadoshim who sacrificed their lives for the sake of Torah, for Talmud Torah, for the Kavod HaTorah, so that Torah shouldn't be desecrated by those who have risen to desecrate it. We've had those kind of kedoshim. Listen to what he's about to say, Rabbi Osei. We had kedoshim for the bris. We've had kedoshim for Torah. But kedoshim who sacrificed their land for kedushas ha'aretz, for the honor of the aretz, for the kedushas ha'mikdash, such kedoshim we have not had for 2,000 years. Since the times our enemies robbed us of our land and were mechal of the mikdash. The Gemara in Brachos tells us that if you benched and you didn't have bris and you didn't have Torah and you didn't have Eretz Yisrael, lo yotzi yadecha vaso. For the past 2,000 years, we had kedoshim of bris. We had kedoshim for Torah, but we were missing kedoshim for Eretz Yisrael. And now these young boys, these yeshiva boys, now 1929 and of 1929 in Chevron, now we have completed, we have now Kedoshim also for Eretz Yisrael. They gave their lives for Kedushas, Hakotel HaMaravi, Srid HaMikdash, for the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, for the Kavod of Eretz Yisrael. And after 2,000 years, we have before us the Gilgulim of the Giborim of the time of the Churban HaBayis who fought for the Beis HaMikdash. Rabosai, over the past few decades, it hasn't been just the 36 people who were killed in Hebron. I'm shaking. I don't know if you are. The perspective that for 2,000 years we had a certain kind of kedoshim, and now nothing to do with the Medina. This is 1929. There's the Rav of Vilna in 1929. We have people who are giving up their lives for Eretz Yisrael. In the same way, 1,953 years ago, and in Beitar, 70 years after that, they gave up their lives, not just for Torah, not just for Bris, but for Eretz Yisrael, for Kedushas HaMakom. At Tzion, June 1967, you've heard perspectives from people who were there, your Rebbe, your uncle, I heard it from him. What people felt like in 1967 after the Six-Day War. I want to share with you a shir that was given by Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the Sheshiva of the Mir, right after the Six-Day War. I tried to find the Hebrew original. I wasn't able to, so I only have the English. I'm not a Navi. I'm a Pashta man, Pashta Yid. But it seems clear to me, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, and I suppose between you and me, he's the closest we have to a Navi. It's clear to me, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, that if we had a Navi today, he would declare, Nachon Kisacha Me'az. Hashem Yish Melchama, Hashem Shemo. Continues Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in his Shmuz in the Mir Yeshiva. The Vilna Gaon wrote a letter to his mother, he said, if I am ever Zoche to stand at Shar HaShemayim, at the Kotel HaMa'aravi, I will daven for you, he tells his mother. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the Vilna Gaon was not Zoche to do that. But we are. We could stand at the Shar HaShemayim to daven on behalf of Klal Yisrael. That's Tzion. And the Rav of Vilna, Rav Krakowski, continued and said something very frightening. A medrash that describes Yirmiyah's feelings about what he had to do. He had to prophesy the Churban. He saw the Churban. And you know what Yirmiyah says? You know what I feel like? I feel like a Kohen who has to do Parshas Sota. Has to embarrass a woman, rip off her head covering, unravel her hair, shame her publicly. That's my job. That's what I have to do. Take this cup of Me'amarim, force it down her throat till she explodes or not. And as I rip off the head covering of that woman to disgrace her, to shame her, maybe even to kill her, I notice, say Chazal, says Yirmiyah, that it's my mother. She's my mother, who I love, who took care of me. And Yirmiyah begins to cry. I tried so hard to be mechabed you, and here I have to shame you. Oili olayich, ima tzion. Hayisi sabar liyos. I so much wanted to be misnabe alayach dvarim tovim, to give nevuas of geula, nevuas of promise, nevuas of hope, nevuas of nichumim. And instead, v'hareini ki misnabe alayach divrei peranos, instead I have to give nevuas of destruction on you. I feel like I'm ripping off my mother's hair covering instead of the cover that I wanted to give to my mother, to Tzion. Here we have the opportunity to express our love for Tzion, to recognize the Kedoshim, not just of 1929, who gave their life, besides the Kedoshim that we've had of 2,000 years of for Torah and Bris, but now we have an added level of Kedusha, of Kedoshim, the Kedoshim for Tzion, for Tzion, for Tzion. Lamed Vav. We'll now turn to the Kina that Rav Shimon Schwab wrote for the Holocaust. In my version, it's on page 386. We said the Baba Rebbe's Kina last night. We'll say Rav Shimon Schwab's Kina this morning. There were three words that struck me. I don't remember if it was in this morning's Haftar or in Eicha, towards the end of Eicha. Hashem Ein B'Tzion. Hashem Ein B'Tzion. Frightening words, Hashem Ein B'Tzion. I'd like to tell you a story, share with you two stories. The book is a well-known book, Lieutenant Birnbaum. My son's reading it now. It's his Tisha B'Av reading. I don't think you need stories because I know many of you have lots and lots of family that you could write kinos about, that your parents could write kinos about, your grandparents could certainly have written kinos if they were left to live without anyone in their family. An incident that took place one day in Buchenwald, however, helped me put in my own achievement in proper perspective. One day I was interviewing survivors to help them track down family members in America. Again, this is Lieutenant Birnbaum, who's an American soldier who was in the DP camps after the war. One of them approached me and said, I see that you're Jewish. I nodded. He continued, from your yarmulke, I assume you're from a Yid. I like to think that I'm a religious Jew, I replied. The man there stood there for a moment with a look of pity in his eyes. And then he shocked me. He spit in my face. I hope your God had a good schluff, he said. Because my Bubby and Zadie, they're schluffing. My mommy and Tati, they're schluffing. My sisters, my brothers, they're all schluffing. My wife, she's schluffing. My children, they're schluffing. And your God, he's also schluffing. So I hope he had a good schluff. My first reaction was fury. I wanted to take out my gun and shoot him on the spot. And no doubt I would have felt proud for about 5 seconds that I had not stood by and let him blaspheme. But as the man went on and he became gradually more and more hysterical, he reached out his arms towards me and I saw the number from Auschwitz with which the Nazis had marked him for life. As the recognition of what he had gone through flashed before me, I realized I have no right to judge him. That no one who had not suffered what he suffered, no one who had not witnessed what he witnessed, could pass judgment on his loss of faith or dare to say that they would have been done better in a similar situation. The 3 years I had gone through the DP camps were nothing compared to what those survivors had been through. Hashem Ein B'tzion. Continues Lieutenant Berman, at the same time began to fully appreciate for the first time the heroism of those who emerged with their faith intact and who even had the courage to pick up the broken shards of their lives and begin anew, marrying again, raising children, sending the children to yeshivas. One woman told me that she had been married before the war and she had one small babies. When the Nazis entered Warsaw, trying to think back, 4 summers ago when I visited Warsaw. Imagine where this might have taken place. She clasped her babies close to her, but the Nazi soldiers snatched him away. And in front of her eyes, they played a game called catch. And they threw the baby back and forth in the air. But, you know, sometimes we throw our kids into the air and catch them. But they had a different ending to the game. You see, at a certain point, one German placed his bayonet into the air as the other one flung the baby onto the bayonet, bringing an end to their grisly game. We talked about 36 people killed in Hebron. Talked about you boys bleeding to death over their Gemaras in Merkez Harav during Mishmar. Talked about a few dozen, maybe a few hundred in Mainz and Speyer and Magenza. Talked about others. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash was a lot more. Josephus, I think, says 1.2 million were killed in Churban HaBayis. But when we think about what your grandparents, your great-grandparents endured not long ago at all, everything else just pales in significance, in magnitude. And it's almost, the number is so big that it becomes so meaningless. The only way we're able to translate any meaning is because we have to think of one little story, one little baby, one little mother seeing a bayonet, a German bayonet, plunge through the body of her baby. Then we could sort of understand, multiply that again. You still don't even get close to understanding the magnitude. Beyond us. All that we know is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not forget. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers every thought, every word, every action that any and all human beings articulate, do, think throughout all of history. That's only nechama, if it's nechama at all. That's what we'll start with, Hazocher. Baruch Hashem, who remembers, and he should remember all of the Kedoshim who gave their lives for one reason and one reason only, because they're the children of Avram and Sarah, the children of the Avos HaKedoshim, for nothing else. I mean, the children of Hashem. Page 386 in my version, the Kina, the Zichron HaKedoshim, Shachur Bar Europa, from Rav Shimon Schwab. We've arrived at the end of the train journey. In a minute, we'll stand up and we'll sing together Elit Zion. I never realized how sad and depressing Elit Zion is until I went through it. Just as I was preparing, every single line is another thing that we lost. 22 lines of Aleph Beis. Line after line, everything we suffered, the spiritual losses, the physical pain, the flowing of the blood, the makos. And then we get to the climax, the very last line. Shin, the fourth to last line on page 392. Alei Shimcha, we cry, Alei Shimcha Shechulal. We cry for the Chil Hashem. Maybe now, after hours of kinos, outlining every possible atrocity that could and did befall us, we could have a sense of pain for the ultimate pain. Al Shimcha Asher Chulal. We started off our journey last night to the cries of the woman in the neighborhood of Rabbi Gamliel, who lost her child. And through that cry, through those tears, Rabbi Gamliel was himself able to cry for the Tzar HaShechina. And that's the point that we've achieved. After crying for ourselves and for Klal Yisrael and for the spiritual and physical treasures that we lost, we can now, in the very, very, very last line of kinos, perhaps feel an iota of pain, not for ourselves and for Klal Yisrael, for what we suffered, and we, boy, did we suffer, but Al Shimcha Asher Chulal, for the Tzar HaShechina, for HaKadosh Baruch, who wants so much to just be mative to us, to pour bracha on us, to give us happiness, to give us simcha, to give us simchas, to give us shiduchim, to give us nachas, to give us health, to give us everything good. That's what Hashem wants. And so long as we don't do it, we have to. Hashem's hands, kibayochel, are tied, are cabled, are shackled. Through our tshuva, we have the opportunity to unshackle HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. And despite the pain and suffering and torture that this kina specifies very clearly, talks about us crying, and as they end every year, it's not just a cry. Elit Zion, cry out, Zion, around all the cities of Eretz Yisrael, cry out, kamo, like a screams of who? Ki isha, kamo isha b'tzirah. There's something unique about the cries of a woman and her labor pains, a woman having contractions. There's no such thing as telling her to be quiet. Stop screaming. Last night, we leaned in the first pasuk, Hoysa ka'almana. And Chazal say she's not an almana. She's ke'almana because her husband's going to come back to her. He will return. And that's why we say, Kamo isha b'tzireha, because after the pains of after the birth pains and the birth pains, a baby is born, a smile is reached, Yeshua is achieved. You hear a cry, but it's not a cry of sadness. It's a cry of a healthy baby born from those tears, those screams, those wailings of Isha B'tzireha. You should be Zocha very speedily, having undergone enough, many, many, many more months than nine to be and suffer the pains and the contractions. We're now ready for the birth, for the Geula Shlema B'mheira V'yameinu.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.